You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
800-year-old Zen philosophies, the dot-com bubble of the 1990s, and the relationship between a writer and her reader would appear to have little in common other than their inclusion in Ruth Ozeki's latest novel, A Tale for the Time Being. Ms. Ozeki, the best-selling, award-winning author of My Year of Meats and All Over Creation, has also made several critically acclaimed independent films, and she's a Zen Buddhist priest. Her new novel, her third, is published by Viking, and I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show. Hello.
Hi. Thank you, Leonard.
One of the main characters, I'm sure you're asked this every time, one of the main characters named Ruth.
Yes, yes.
And like you, she lives in a small island in Canada, yeah. Part-time anyway. How much of Ruth, the character, should I assume, is autobiographical?
You know, the sort of shape of character Ruth's life, I think, is very similar to mine. But you know, in a way, she's just a facet. And as many, you know, as characters in novels are, it's sort of a facet, perhaps, of my life, but certainly not the whole.
But writers have been playing with that for a while. Marcel in Marcel Proust's.
Yes.
Novels, and since then, I guess we see that every so often, and you wonder what the writer is really trying to tell us.
Yeah, I mean, I think in this case, you know, I really resisted doing this, putting a character named Ruth in the novel. In fact, when I first started writing this in 2006, it occurred to me to do so because I really conceived of the novel as a sort of a story about what happens when a character enters the mind of a novelist and a book sort of springs forth from that. But I resisted it because it seemed kind of pomo and metafictional for all of the wrong reasons, and so I you know, sort of didn't go there. But then in 2011, when the earthquake and tsunami hit in Tohoku, I realized that at that point, you know, I needed to step forward. I needed to sort of step forward and be able to talk about these things in a way that felt more serious.
Well, Naoko, the other main character, is also a writer. And I was wondering, don't writing teachers warn writers about writing about writers?
They do, and publishers warn warn writers about writing about writers, too. I did, and when, that's something else that I resisted. But in this case, it was... It just felt like the right thing to do. Maybe it's an occupational hazard. You know, you write for long enough and stop doing other things, and finally the only thing you know about is writing. So,
also, it seems to me that every artist has to deal with the fact that if somebody says you shouldn't do this, then that's something you got to do.
Exactly, it's like throwing down a gauntlet. You know,
Ruth finds a journal that's washed up on shore. What's happening in Ruth's life when she finds the journal?
Well, not much. Ruth is suffering from a kind of writer's block. She's trying to write a memoir, and failing to do so. She's in a bit of a funk, and she's living on this remote island in Desolation Sound with her husband and her cat, and just sort of waiting.
And she feels lonely and isolated, away from her previous home, New York City.
That's right, yeah.
So do her feelings about the island change after she begins to read the journal?
Well, I think, ironically, she finds, you know, she's got all sorts of criticisms, you know, of the island, but ironically, she finds everything that she needs right there. And I think that's what she discovers through, you know, through the investigation of this diary.
Didn't you become a landed immigrant in Canada soon after George W. Bush became president?
Yes, isn't that a coincidence?
Have you become a Canadian citizen?
Yes, I have. I became a citizen in 2005.
Now, the other character's name is Naoko, but she's called Nao.
That's right.
And the title of the book is A Tale for the Time Being.
Yes.
The pun is intentional.
Absolutely Nao. Intentional. Yes, yes.
In reading Nao's journal, Ruth even begins to affect the events of Nao's life, even though obviously she can't really, mm-hmm. but that's through conscious and unconscious action in her dreams. That feels kind of like magical realism fiction. Did you think about that when you were writing?
Yes, I did, and I thought it would be. I was interested in the idea of writing a character Ruth, whom everyone would, of course, assume is autobiographical, and therefore grounded in a certain kind of realism, and then allow sort of magical realist elements to sort of filter into that.
Well, interconnectedness is a big theme in this book.
Yes, Yes, very much so.
On how many levels are the events and the characters connected?
Oh, my goodness. It's so difficult to quantify it. But, you know, because the way I really thought of it, I suppose, is using the metaphor of these oceanic gyres that, you know, that bring this diary across the Pacific from Japan to wash up on Ruth's shoreline. You know, the idea that there are these kind of currents and gyres that connect us physically, you know, on the planet, but that there's also so many other different kinds of connections that occur in any kind of relationship.
Because the human condition is similar no matter where you go.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
People in different parts of the world can feel lonely. They can also be writers.
Yes, yeah.
Now's great-grandmother, Jiko, is a 104-year-old feminist anarchist writer who's now a Buddhist nun. Are there any real Buddhist nuns with such exciting pasts?
Well, there are Buddhist nuns with exciting pasts for sure. The woman who really was an inspiration for this character is a woman named Jakucho, Setouchi Jakucho. And she was a novelist, and she's still alive. She's 90 years old now. She had a very racy past and became a nun when she was 50 years old. And right now is still writing novels. She's writing cell phone novels now, which are very popular in Japan, novels written on cell phones.
Well, what happens when you become this is a Zen Buddhist nun, right?
Yes.
We're talking about Zen Buddhism
that's right,
here.
That's right.
In European traditions, mm-hmm. and especially in the Middle Ages, mm-hmm. Women with racy pasts would sometimes enter a convent and then live a life of contrition.
Yeah.
Would somebody like Jiko be living a life of contrition?
Well, I wouldn't. I'm not sure that in Jiko's case it was contrition exactly. I mean, she, you know, she went through some very devastating experiences during World War II, and so I think she was grieving for, you know, the loss of her son, and I think, you know, joining the monastery was a way of addressing that.
The book delves into the discussion of time, particularly as it relates to the ideas put forth by the Zen master Dogen Zenji. Yeah. Can you explain his concept of time?
It's difficult, but I think that the idea is just that, you know, that time, we think of time in one way as you know, flowing from past to future, but I think Dogen would say that time flows in all directions, and that you can't really separate time from being. And this is, of course, something that it's a, you know, a philosophical inquiry that's interested us human beings since, you know, since ancient Egypt, you know, philosophers and all the way through Heidegger. So,
and that's also part of what this relationship between these two people who don't live near each other is all about.
Yes, and I mean, I think this is something that all writers are very conscious of, the fact that when you're writing across time.
When did you become a Zen Buddhist?
I started practicing seriously Zen Buddhism probably about 10, 12 years ago. Before that, I'd been practicing in different Buddhist traditions, in Tibetan tradition.
Which is totally different.
Which is very different. But there are certain practices, of course, especially in the West, that are key. I mean, meditation is one of the key practices that, you know, that relate.
So this was an opportunity to incorporate some of the thinking that came with your interest in Zen Buddhism into a novel.
Yes, I'd been studying and practicing Zen very seriously during the period of time when my mother was dying. I was taking care of her. She had Alzheimer's, and it was a very intense period. And that's when I really started taking my Buddhist practice seriously.
And Ruth's mother in this novel also has Alzheimer's.
That's right.
So you have incorporated various aspects of your life to some degree because the tsunami got you started working on this book again?
Yes, exactly. I mean, once the tsunami hit and I realized how serious it was, I'd had various other characters in the book as Now's reader, you know. But it was once the tsunami hit, I realized that I kind of needed to take this more seriously and really put some of my life forward in a way, you know, so that I could really talk about it.
You also deal with the whole matter of people living in cultures that are not necessarily their own.
Mm-hmm.
There's Haruki. Yeah. Well, you have Haruki 1 and Haruki 2. Haruki 2 loses his job when the dot-com bubble bursts, and that forces him and his family to move from Silicon Valley back to Japan. Was that a common situation?
I'm not sure whether it was a common situation, but the Haruki is Nao's father, and he was a computer programmer in Silicon Valley. I mean, you know, of course, during the dot-com, when the dot-com bubble burst, you know, many people lost their jobs.
And Nao is his daughter.
And Nao is his daughter.
And she says that she feels more American than Japanese.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What happens when you're Japanese? You've lived in America, and then you go back to Japan. Yeah. The Japanese don't look upon you as being completely Japanese either.
I think that's probably true. Yeah, I mean, I think that you know this kind of displacement, cultural displacement, is something that people very much suffer in that kind of case. Yeah.
My guest is Ruth Ozeki. Her latest novel is A Tale for the Time Being. It is published by Viking. Your previous background was as a journalist and documentary filmmaker.
That's correct, yeah.
And earlier novels, your first book, My Year of Meats, was a kind of a send-up of the beef industry. Your second was about genetically engineered crops, although, as you've told me a number of times, it's really about relationships. But still,
right.
I assume that they grew out of your career as a television and film producer.
Yes, they did. You know, I think that the reason that I choose to write a novel is writing is a way of thinking about something. And so when I, you know, chose something like, for example, the meat industry or the genetic modification of crops, you know, it was because these were things that worried me. They were things that concerned me. And writing a novel about it seemed like a very good way of structuring, you know, an inquiry into these disturbing things. So, you know, that's why else would you spend many, many years writing a novel if you weren't, you know, if you didn't have some sort of deep concern about it?
Well, what they all have in common is finding a narrative.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
And I would think it's harder for a documentary filmmaker because you have all these little scraps and you somehow have to piece them together into a narrative, whereas as a novelist, you're totally in control. You don't have to worry about what you have on film.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons I was not such a great documentary filmmaker. I kept wanting to make things up. You know, I have a sense of narrative propriety, and when the world doesn't accommodate, you know, my sensibility, then, you know, that was terribly frustrating to me. If you're writing fiction, you make it up.
So do you still want to make films?
Well, you know, I love making films. There's something about working with visuals, working with sound. It's a very, very different experience than working with language. And I do miss it.
It's unusual to have footnotes in a novel, but you include them in this book.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, A Tale for the Time Being, a lot of Japanese novels started off with the name, with the words, A Tale.
Yes.
Tale of Genji, for example. And every version of Tale of Genji I've ever seen has had lots of footnotes because it's important for the translators to explain all sorts of things that I would not know otherwise. Was that an inspiration for this?
Yes. I mean, I think that, you know, the idea of heavily annotated Japanese texts, it's something that I'm familiar with because that was my background studying classical Japanese literature. And yes, the idea in Japanese, it's monogatari. But the idea of the tale is it's a very powerful genre in Japanese fiction. So.
Well, if Ruth, the character, wrote the footnotes, can we assume that she's also the author of the whole book?
Well, in a way, the way I thought of it was that there's the character Ruth, but then there's a kind of an authorial Ruth who is, you know, slightly, whose vision is slightly wider. And I really thought of it more as the author Ruth who's supplying the footnotes, because actually I think there were one or two instances where author Ruth footnoted character Ruth's sections as well.
The last time you were here, we talked about the fact that you also have raised chickens in Canada.
Yes, yes.
Who takes care of the chickens when you're in New York?
Well, we've unfortunately had to stop raising chickens. We incubate ducks now, and when we incubate a clutch of ducks and then we give them all away.
Ruth Ozeki's latest novel is A Tale for the Time Being. It's published by Viking. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.